So I think Chetan would like to have two acknowledgments. So thank you again. So I have two apologies. First of all, I have a little cold, so please bear with me. But the second is that we are running a workshop here on quantum spin Hall effect topological insulator. I gave a slightly different version of the talk, but hope there's still a lot of new people just here for the conference. But the main thing I would like to emphasize to this community is that there's a great synergy between two rather different directions, but now I think the common unity is all captured in this diagram. We all know and love the quantum Hall effect, which break time reversal and have chiral fermions at the edge. The recent discovery is on the quantum spin Hall effect. For example, it can be realized, this is realized in gallium arsenide. This can be realized in the mercury terrarite quantum wells. It's like a cousin of the quantum Hall effect, but now time reversal symmetry is completely preserved. So now for this community, you're all very interested in the... So here at the edge, rather than chiral fermion, you have a one copy of the Dirac fermion. And I will tell you why this is non-trivial and important. But this community has also been very interested in the P plus IP superconductor and its relationship to Moore Reed state that by itself could be realized in strontium ruthenate. But if you have this, so in this direction, you are breaking T. These two states don't break T. And you go from chiral fermion, and the edge state of the chiral superconductors are chiral Majorana fermion. So therefore, it's very natural to postulate that there are also states where you have pure Majorana rather than chiral Majorana. And this is the chiral superconducting state. And so this is the kind of the overall table I like to present to you. And this, of course, is due to the work of many people. I will acknowledge them during my talk. But one paper we wrote on this subject is pretty comprehensive. You can take a look at these and some recent work on the, which is posted on the net. So I hope, I hope to cover quickly some of these topics. One is to introduce you to the concept of topological insulators. I do not like to call them topological banding insulators anymore because we have the most general topological field theoretical definition of them, which could be valid for interacting system as well. And then I will discuss these two types of topological superconductor. One type you are very familiar with, but I hope to generate your interest in another type of superconductor, which I think is similarly interesting. And then I will talk about microscopic models and experimental realization. And there I really like to make the parallel between these two states, the superconducting state and the topological insulating state, completely manifest. And then I like to discuss the fractionalization, which I think is the main focus of this community and its possible generalizations. And presumably we're all interested in topological quantum computing and interested in having some room temperature eventually, topological quantum computers, but at least the topological insulators at room temperature seems to be quite feasible. Just this week, you see that there are two preprints posted on the net by the Princeton group, experimental, and Stanford group, theoretical. So the quantum Hall state is the first topologically non-trivial state of matter we know in condensed matter systems. You can define the topology in terms of some TKN and integer in terms of the topology in the momentum space, which is basically given by the first Chern number. This formulation, of course, is only valid when you have non-interacting system and no disorder where no momentum space eigenstates are well defined. But there's a more general characterization of the quantum Hall state, and that's captured by the topological field theory, namely it's the Chern-Simons field theory. And so we would like to ask ourselves whether there this new topological insulating state can be captured by a similar field theory. It turns out the story turned out to be very, very simple. There's a momentum real space duality. in the new class of topological insulators, in the real space, they're defined by something like the Chern number, whereas in the momentum space, they're defined by something like the Chern-Simons term. And that's the very simple picture I like to get across to you. But I'd like to first make the matter very, very simple. Suppose you are just doing ordinary Landau-Ginzburg type of effective field theory, but for insulator. So for insulator, you say, what are the most important properties of the insulator? You say, well, in an insulator, the electric field is well-defined and the magnetic field is well-defined. And then I can write a simple effective field theory for the system in terms of E squared and B squared, and you introduce two phenomenological constants, epsilon and mu, which describes the insulator. But then in the spirit of the Landau-Ginzburg theory, we try to find all terms which are quadratic, which are most important describing linear response, and terms which contains the lowest order number of derivatives. And then there's another term you can write down, and that's E dot B, which is also a Lorentz scalar, rotationally invariant. So now when you look at the effect of the time reversal, you see E goes to E, but B goes to minus B. So therefore, this theta parameter goes to minus of itself. So therefore, you would think that if you fixed a certain non-zero value of theta, maybe this term will break time reversal symmetry. And if it does, it will describe this term some effect, like if you apply a magnetic field, you generate an electric polarization. When you apply electric field, you will generate a magnetic polarization. So this will be appropriately called the magneto-electric effect. But then you think about this one example you perhaps know about a ring in a one-dimensional system. So now we consider space in a one-dimensional but periodic situation. So in this case, when you thread a flux, suppose you live purely in a one-dimensional world, and somebody threaded a flux throughout the ring, but then for the general value of the flux, the time reversal is completely broken inside the ring. But there's one special value of the flux where time reversal symmetry is preserved, and that's when the value of the flux is equal to pi, or in units of phi zero. And this happens because your world is completely periodic when the flux is shifted by 2 pi n. And under time reversal, phi goes to minus phi. But there's one very special value, namely pi, whose time reversal is minus pi. And minus pi and pi differ by 2 pi, which is the same physical system. So if you live in this world, purely one-dimensional world, which is periodic, not with open boundary, then your world will be time reversal invariant when the pi flux is going out the ring. Because then it turns out that a similar argument is valid for this so-called E dot B term. E dot B can be simply written in terms of wedge F in the language of dual field tensors, and that can be completely written as a surface term. It's a total derivative of the Chern-Simons term. So if you similarly put a periodic boundary condition in the 3 plus 1 dimensional world by defining, for example, a Euclidean field theory of a generally interacting fermionic system, you will find that this integral for E dot B is also integer multiples not of the flux, but of the square of the flux. Of course, I normalize all the elementary constants in such a way, then you find that the theta parameter enters the partition function with the form of e to the I theta n. So therefore, there's also a periodicity when theta is shifted by 2 pi n, similar to the case of a one-dimensional ring. Then you find that there are two special values of the theta parameter, namely when theta is equal to 0 or theta equals to pi, even though the term naively looks like breaking the time reversal symmetry, just like the problem of the ring, actually time reversal symmetry is preserved. So that gives you a very general classification of all insulators in the world, time reversal invariant insulators. If you give me a Hamiltonian describing a time reversal invariant insulators, I consider them, it can be generally interacting, strong disorder, whatever. I generally consider them with this periodic boundary condition. Integrate out the fermions, I can only get two possible values, either theta equals to 0 or theta equals to pi, and theta is equal to pi is called the topological non-trivial insulator. That's it. This can be the simplest possible definition of a topological insulator. So this is the subject matter which can be defined, and we know this term is a topological term, and that's why it's describing theta equals to pi, interesting new state. Now, historically, Kane and Melee first constructed a model of a topologically non-trivial time-reversal invariant insulators for a graphene system, which is a very nice theoretical illustration. It turns out the real graphene does not quite do that. Independently, Bernovic and myself constructed a model of a semiconductor structure under strain. It turns out strain can generate through spin orbit coupling Landau levels without introducing any magnetic field or time reversal symmetry breaking. So this direction has not been that much work in this direction yet. But for this community, I believe when we talk about fractional quantum Hall state, you may ask what are the fractional quantum spin Hall state generalizations of the non-abelian states, so on and so forth. That could be an interesting direction. And then we managed to theoretically predict that there's the quantum spin Hall effect can be realized in the Mercury Terai quantum well. And Lorenz Mollenkamp's group, Lorenz is here, Markus Koenig is here, they demonstrated that experimentally. I will come to the data a little bit later on. So then these groups, they have introduced the Bent theoretical definition of a three-dimensional topological insulator. Work introduced a topological field theoretical definition, and there's experimental indications of that. Experiment is still going on as we speak. A lot of exciting new development. So you know the theta terms are very important both for condensed matter physics and for particle physics. Maybe in condensed matter, the first famous example is the Haldane's term, theta term for the quantum spin chain. There's the Pushkin term for the quantum Hall phase transitions, and there's a theta vacuum in QCD. So once you find a topological term, this captures all the fundamental essence of a topological state of matter. So now what exactly is the physical interpretation? How does this magneto-electric effect could come about? I first convinced you that theta equals to pi for a periodic system is time reversal invariant. But if somebody takes build a growth out of a wafer, a real solid, then of course it has boundaries. So then time reversal symmetry actually is broken. So what exactly it means? What does theta periodicity mean? What does theta equals to pi mean? Very, very simple mathematical identity. You write E dot B, and we know E and B are not fundamental. You express E in terms of A, and it is actually a transaminous term. By the very first slide I have presented to you, we know that the transaminous term describes quantum Hall effect. In fact, we know exactly which quantum Hall state it describes if you know the coefficient of the transaminous term. So therefore, a 3 plus 1 dimensional bulk theory with E dot B implies a quantum Hall effect on the boundary. Now, what is the value of the quantum Hall conductance? Here comes an interesting surprise. If theta equals to pi, the conductance is equals to 1 half. Now, of course, this community talked about 1 half all the time, but this is very, very surprising because in principle, you can have a model with non-interacting electrons, which could give you a theta term of theta equals to pi. So this is saying a non-interacting system could have a quantized Hall conductance of 1 half, which seems to be very, very bizarre. And to some, in some limited sense, you can prove this is impossible. So I try to explain to you why the impossible becomes possible. So just for the experimentalists here, this may be a little bit too mathematical, but I'd like to show you an experimental diagram, namely this is the quantum Hall effect of the graphene. So when they plotted the quantum Hall effect of the graphene, they did a very, very interesting choice of the coordinate system, namely on the y-axis, which we normally plot sigma xy, in units of e squared over h, they plotted sigma xy in units of 4 e squared over h. And they say, wow, very, very interesting. In graphene, we have half quantum Hall effect. In the units of 4 e squared over h, we have half quantum Hall effect. Now, what does it mean? Because they want to get a message across. In graphene, there are 4 Dirac cones, and they measure half quantum steps because they knew something. They knew that each Dirac cone contributes 1 half of the quantum Hall conductance, and graphene has 4, so therefore they want to illustrate the basic fundamental Dirac physics, so that's why they plotted in units of 4 e squared over h. Now, so, but after all, this is not one half in the real units. It's two in real units. So what this then is saying is that if we have a surface quantum Hall conductance of one half, it must be due to a single copy of the Dirac cone. Graphene has four, so therefore the surface of a topological insulator is one quarter of graphene. So now, in an open boundary system, the system has a Hall response, but Hall response breaks time reversal. But on the other hand, we say this is a classification of time reversal invariant insulators. What does it mean? It means that in order to get a well-defined local electromagnetic response, if you have a half of a Dirac cone living on the surface, this is not an insulator because it conducts. It's a semi-metal. So what you need to do in order to define a well-defined effective field theory is actually to put a small symmetry breaking field on the boundary. And you can do that. There's only one way to make the topological insulator fully insulating without any gapless modes, and that's by applying a T-breaking field. But it can be an infinitesimal field. It can be a very, very small field, and nothing depends on the details of this field. And so then if you apply this field, the time reversal symmetry is broken. Experimentally, what you can do is to coat a thin magnetic film on top of the topological insulator. So then T is broken, and one copy of Dirac cone in the infinitesimal field will exactly give you a conductance of one half or minus one half, and so on. So this, in a way, theta vacuum with theta equals to pi implies one Dirac cone on the surface. When you put a small T-breaking field, it will always give you quantized Hall conductance in units of one half modulo a integer. So then for open system, there's not exactly a theta periodicity, but you can define a generalized equivalence class. You say that if I have a surface and if I have a general Hall conductance, then I can relate all of them if they are related to each other by an integer quantum Hall plateau transition. So for example, 0, 1, 2, 3, and 4, and so on, they can all be related to each other by doing something to the surface only. For example, by changing the disorder on the surface. On the other hand, if you have one half of a conductance, then by the integer plateau transition, you can never go to zero. You can only get to minus one half, minus three quarter, plus three quarter, and so on and so forth. So there's nothing you can do which is only restricted on top of the surface of a topological insulator, which will change one half to any value like zero or two pi. And so that gives you a general sense of an equivalence class, and in that sense, there are only two classes of insulator, and they are not related to each other by a surface property, and they're distinct bulk properties. So one half modulo one is a characterization of the bulk property. So now you may wonder, so one after you understand the basic physics of graphene, there's a question you may always wonder, right? So what graphene has four, but can you construct a two-dimensional system which has only odd number of Dirac points? And there's a theorem which says fundamentally it's impossible. The basic idea is proved in this paper, but the basic idea is borrowed from the so-called Neo-Sinonomia theorem, which says that the chiral fermions odd number of copies is now possible on a lattice. What we proved is that the odd number of Dirac fermions is now possible, but only under this restricted condition that if you have Kramer's degeneracy for the underlying fermions. But that gives you a remarkable surface property, because that's almost something surface scientists have been dreaming. You have a conducting surface, which absolutely is impossible to open up a gap unless you break time reversal. So if you have any ordinary matter, for example, you put you expose your surface to the oxidation, you deposit some graphene sheet on the top of the surface, as long as you have only a single number of Dirac cone, then by this no-go theorem, it says any two-dimensional matter has to have odd number of Dirac cone, and they can mutually annihilate, but you will always be left with one. And that's kind of another fundamental characterization of the robustness of the surface property. So now this term leads to fascinating and interesting physics, and first of all, it leads to the topological magnetoelectric effect. So the theta... Yeah.
It's very, very close to what you're talking about. In graphene, it's well known that because there are charge increases in the environment, there is a fluctuation of the Dirac point, meaning Right. Homogeneity.
Right.
You don't
right.
have infinite length.
Right. Right.
And this is not reasonably well understood in zero field.
Right.
That it leads to this flattening of the conductivity.
Right. Right.
And the conductivity is not universal.
Yeah. Yeah. Very. Very.
How would that affect the topological property?
Yeah. 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 In a magnetic field. In a magnetic field, it can only have two values. 1/2 or minus 1/2.
There
will be exactly quantized to
so
be 1/2 or minus 1/2. Yeah, yeah, absolutely protected. Whereas Dirac is not, graphene is not.
Ah, graphene is
not. But this one is. Yeah. So now, if you take this topological insulator and you coat the surface with a thin magnetic film, which is ferromagnetic, single domain, so then it leads to a well-defined topological magnetoelectric effect. And now we understand immediately the physics of the magnetoelectric effect. And by the way, magnetoelectric effect is, for engineering purposes, now very, very important effect. So you apply electric field, and you know that you have ferromagnetic moment normal to the cylindrical surface. So then by the surface 1/2 quantum Hall effect, you will generate a Hall current. But the Hall current will generate a magnetization. So the magnetization induced is equals to alpha, where alpha is 1 over 137, the fine structure constant, and theta is equals to pi for a topological insulator. And the reverse effect is also true. When you apply a magnetic field, you induce charge polarization, where the polarization tensor is alpha times B. So you get a whole set of equations, which are slightly modified version of the Maxwell equation, and Frank Wilczek wrote a very four-sided paper extracting from the QCD theta angle. He says that there might also be implications for the U1 part of the electrodynamics. So now, how do you actually, given a material, how do you actually compute? So this P3 is called the electromagnetic polarization, and it is equals to pi. It's equals to, in this unit, it's equals to 1/2 for a topological insulator and equals to 0 modulo 1 for a trivial insulator. It turns out that the P3 can be actually computed, and this, we discovered a formula for it. It is the non-abelian Chern-Simons form integrated over the three-dimensional Brillouin zone, if you have a three-dimensional insulator. Where does the non-abelian nature come in? Mike was asking me this question, because this kind of situation only happens when you have Kramer's degeneracy. So you always have doublets, and the non-abelian basically works under the space of this doublet. Now you see a very interesting and beautiful duality between the quantum Hall effect and quantum spin Hall effect or topological insulator. In quantum Hall effect, you have TKNN formula, which is a Chern number in momentum space, and you have a field theory, which is a Chern-Simons term in momentum space, in real space. But here, it's just the other way around. The momentum space is a Chern-Simons term, but the real space is FF dual, which is like the second Chern number. Yeah. Yeah, the explicit formula now requires momentum. But in general, I can just do an integral.
Can you explain what you mean by two threes affecting the third term?
No, the change of P3.
Number of what?
Yeah. So the P3, so when you, the one-dimensional polarization tensor in a one-dimensional system, ordinary electric polarization, has an expression like the Barry phase expression. But that expression is ambiguous. But when you under adiabatic change, only always changes by one. So under adiabatic change, you have a one-dimensional momentum k, adiabatic angle of theta. These two form a two-dimensional space. And then you have a Barry curvature. So the integral... I'm just giving an analogy. One dimension, you define an ordinary polarization. So one dimension, you have an integral over k. Now, I consider adiabatic integral k of partial psi, the psi partial k psi, that's polarization, right?
That's not electric polarization.
It is. Electric polarization. X is partial k, right? Electric polarization is x. X is partial k. So,
square.
Huh? No, x, electric polarization is like the x operator, right? The position operator x, x is partial k. So it's like, so you have a first partial k.
Star
psi star partial k psi. Yeah. So now, so this is like the flux-like term. So now you consider the, but the polarization is here defined in a solid. But the change of polarization under adiabatic circle is well defined. So now you introduce a pumping parameter theta. So now you have two parameters in the space of k and theta. So under that pumping, you will get always a first term number. And that first term number is exactly the TKNN integer. Similar thing happens here. You have a P3, which is an integral over the three-dimensional momentum space. And it's measuring the magneto-electric polarization. Joe Moore has a very nice paper. He says it can also be interpreted as electromagnetic polarizability. But in fact, this is a Trans-Hermes term. So now, you consider what happens if you have adiabatic parameter under the Hamiltonian, theta. So then it becomes a four-dimensional integral, 3k and theta integrated over one loop. And that becomes f mu nu dual in the hybrid space of three momentum and one theta variable. And that is the second term number. So there's a very well-defined mathematical structure under it, and we understand what physically is going on. In the symplectic class. The symplectic class, because you have Cramer's doublet, and that's why this is SU2. So if you had time reversal invariant system, which is orthogonal, T squared equals to 1, nothing very interesting will happen. It's all these physics come from spin orbit coupling or the symplectic structure. So now it leads to some very interesting and beautiful physics, and some of them was kind of borrowed from the high-energy field theoretical literature. So now, if you put the electric charge on top of this surface of a topological insulator, it acts like a mirror. So when you ordinarily put an ordinary charge on the ordinary surface, you induce an image charge. But here, because of the magnetoelectric effect, if you put an ordinary charge on top of the surface, the image is a magnetic monopole. Okay? So the image is a magnetic monopole because now that I put a magnetization on the surface, everything's completely gapped. There's no gapless degree of freedom anymore. So therefore, the field lines of the electric charge will go into the plane, which has an in-plane component, which is radial. And that will generate a circulating current, which in turn generates a magnetic field. And to an outside observer, it looks exactly like that of a magnetic monopole. And Witten kind of first discussed this effect for theta vacuum, the relationship between monopole and electric charge. Anytime, it's kind of intuitive. If you have E dot B, some electric thing will appear like magnetic.
So how does the line look inside the
No, I have a diagram, but I can show you. I hide the slide because I don't have enough time. Very simple. Just the field lines go in, and then you have a current, and that generates. So for outside observer, it's just an ENM problem.
But when you get into the insulator,
you will see the charge as a monopole. And there's a relationship between the image charge and the monopole charge, and that satisfies the so-called Witten relationship. Yeah. So anyhow, but now this case, so now there becomes something that may be interesting to this community now. So because we're talking about anions, so one way to realize anion is in quantum Hall effect, just like Bert has pointed out, the first abelian version. But now we have a wonderful alternative to realize at least abelian anion. Because we are theorists, and over the past 20 or 30 years, we have always been playing with these fictitious Gedanken experiments. We see what happens if you can attach a fictitious flux to a charge. Now, we only talked about it, we never actually did it. But now, here's a way to do it experimentally. So here, on the surface, every charge will induce a monopole. Another charge will also induce its monopole. Now, imagine you let them go around each other. This charge will see the monopole charge. Electric charge will see the image monopole charge. This electric charge will see the other image monopole charge. So as you go around, you will accumulate a Born-Hadron-Rono phase vector. Now, when you put these two these electric charges very close to the surface, then the phase you get is independent of the detailed shape of the exchange loop, because it basically counts the flux of the monopole through the upper hemisphere, which is always 2 pi. So then you get a theta angle, which is 2 times alpha squared, which is the fine structure constant, times P3, which is 1/2 for a topological insulator. Yeah? Oh, you mean up and down?
Yeah.
So yeah. So let's consider the flat surface. So every electric charge becomes a ion. Theta is measured from pi because electron originally was fermion, and now becomes pi minus theta. No. This is the exchange angle. Yeah. So now you can also understand all this business from basically the underlying topological insulator for a time reversal topological insulator. The most obvious generalization, if you are not constrained by dimension, is actually a 4+1 dimensional quantum Hall effect, which is for something we have constructed a microscopic model for. So now if you take the favorite kind of exercise that field theorists do, if you compactify, you say, well, we're living in 3+1 dimension. If you compactify the extra dimension and you let a flux generally going through the extra dimension, actually the dimensional reduced field theory is exactly the theta angle effective action. And so we also understand why theta equals to pi is special. So theta equals to pi is like the flux through the extra dimension. And when theta equals to pi, you recover a time reversal symmetry. So now if you have this idea of basic dimensional reduction, you can also easily reduce the theta action, topological action, to the 2+1 dimension by introducing 2 axion fields rather than 1. And everything works. So now this is a little bit field theoretical. I like to be general to give a topological field theoretical definition. But maybe so once you get to this point, you understand the picture must be very, very simple. So the fundamental equation for quantum Hall effect is just to say 2 equals to 1 plus 1. In one dimension, if you have both the forward-going mode and the backward-going mode, once they can be decomposed if you have a two-dimensional topological state into chiral forward, anti-chiral backward. If you have a general spinful one-dimensional liquid, you have 4 modes, up, forward, backward, down, forward, back, backward. And all you're doing is to say 4 equals to 2 plus 2. And so 4 equals to 2 plus 2 means that you decompose these 4 modes into up, going forward, down, going backward. That forms a time reversal invariant Kramer's pair. And similarly here. And the special thing why this is so special is that out of a one-dimensional system, which has T squared equals to minus 1 time reversal symmetry, you can never construct a microscopic model which only has 1 Kramer's pair. You always have to have 2. But they can appear as the boundary of a two-dimensional system. So now let me come to the connection to everything this community has been talking about. You have been talking about the 5/2 Moore Reed state. Reed and Green made a beautiful analogy between 5/2 state and the chiral superconductor. So I like to establish these both as a connection, interesting theoretical connection, because the parallel is extremely striking. But also, it turns out that this kind of reasoning directly tells us what kind of material can realize this interesting quantum spin Hall effect. So let's remember how P plus IP chiral superconductor works. Let's take spinless fermion. You have a particle band, and you have a chemical potential. So you all know interesting things can only happen when the chemical potential is in the middle of the band. So now, in order to do Bogoliubov-Dejean, the simplest way you can do it is you take the reflection of the particle band with respect to the chemical potential. So then you have a downward dispersing parabola. So the upward dispersing parabola and downward dispersing parabola, they intersect at the Fermi energy. Of course, that's the definition of particle and Hall with respect to the chemical potential. So now superconductivity is nothing but a mixture of particle and Hall. So this crossing can be removed if you have superconductivity. So that's a very conventional picture, even true for S-wave superconductor. So now Anderson introduced this beautiful pseudo-spin representation of the parent. He said, let's take a pseudo-spin, which is particle-like, it means pseudo-spin up, and hole-like means pseudo-spin down. So it means when you look at this figure from top down, two-dimensional momentum space, very far away from the Fermi momentum, it's all up, means all particle. In the core, it's all holes, means pseudo-spin down. But in the middle, if you had a chiral superconductor P plus IP pairing, you will have a kind of a vortex-like configuration. And that is a skirmion with skirmion number one in momentum space. And that's what gave rise to all the beautiful chiral superconductor physics. This factor of two that Bert asked during Shankar's talk must have something to do that this winding is one in a chiral superconductor for P wave. Now, we also have been discussing a lot about the weak pairing, strong pairing phase transition, which to me was first pointed out by Rita Green. Very, very simple picture. Now you say, what happens if the chemical potential drops below the bottom of the band? Then when you reflect, you get a hole band which does not intersect the particle band. So now if you take the Anderson pseudo-spin-like picture, you get a boring ferromagnetic configuration, and that's why it's not topological. It has no skirmion number, whereas this one has a skirmion number. It turns out the quantum spin hole physics is exactly this picture when you generalize this picture to... before that. So now you can also ask yourself whether... So now this is just a single copy of P plus IP. So now what if I take the time-reverse copy of that? If I put upspin into P plus IP, but downspin pairing into P minus IP, so then I will get a BDG Hamiltonian of this form. So it's in the space of up particle, up hole, down particle, down hole, 4x4 matrix. You have the particle band, the inverted hole band, and then you have the P plus IP mixing between the particle band and hole band, and you do exactly the time reverse opposite of that for the downspin. And that is non-trivial because each one will have an edge state, which is like a Majorana fermion. But it turns out that a mass for the Majorana fermion is forbidden. So there's a protection by the time reversal symmetry. And besides us, these authors have also pointed this out. It turns out that we always have been making analogies of chiral superconductor with the helium-3 A phase. But this analysis says the B phase is equally interesting. But now I'd like to ask ourselves the question that this type of BDG Hamiltonian, if I don't interpret this in the particle hole space, but in some bands of semiconductors, what is the picture? And it turns out the picture exactly leads to you to quantum spin hole effect or quantum hole effect. So now in ordinary superconductors, in ordinary semiconductor quantum wells, you basically have the conduction band and the valence band. And the conduction band is basically the S band. Basically, like in gallium arsenide, it's basically the gamma 6 S band. But the valence band in a quantum well, they're called so-called the heavy hole state. And the heavy hole state is very, very interesting. The very notion of it refers to spin orbit coupling. Basically, it's a P orbital of the atom where upspin sits in P plus IP and downspin sits in P minus IP. But this is kind of the, so it looks like you have all the basic ingredients of P plus IP already when you write down this model in the matrix form. But the problem is, usually the chemical potential is here. You have the S band and the P band, and they're just separated. Now, it turns out there are strange quantum wells. Most of them you have not heard of before all these recent experiments developed. And that's the simplest way to explain, not the first one we proposed, but in terms of this connection with P plus IP superconductor, the simplest way to explain is the so-called type 2 quantum well. So there you have two materials. One is the indium arsenide, and the other is gallium antimony. It just so happens that the electron band, the bottom of the electron band for indium arsenide, sinks below the top of the valence band for gallium arsenide. Now you get this very interesting collision picture of the conduction band parabola. So you can imagine that I'm tuning some gate voltage so that I can slowly let these two parabola intersect. So when they intersect, I get this picture. I have an E1 band and an H1 band if you don't consider any hybridization between these two materials. But this crossing, but there you can hop between the different layers. So there's a small hybridization gap that will open up. In other words, this degeneracy is generally not protected. So generally, if you don't consider any hopping, you have two intersecting parabola, you get a degeneracy. Anytime you get a degeneracy, you ask yourself a question, is the degeneracy protected or not? And it's not. So generally, the hopping between the two layers, which is always there, will open up a gap. Now, this gap that will open is exactly the P plus IP gap you have for the chiral superconductor. Why? Because the Hamiltonian is identical. Here you have the S band, and here you have the heavy hole band. And the heavy wholeness is very, very important, because upspin lives in a P plus IP orbital. Downspin lives in a P minus IP orbital. And this kind of physics is always there, even in gallium arsenide. But the interesting level collision did not happen. So that's why, in order to look for this kind of physics, so we all understand, and particularly your community, understand there's a quantum phase transition between this picture and this picture. And it all refers to whether the two parabolas intersect or not. So now you have a wonderful tuning parameter. Just by tuning some gates in this type 2 quantum well, you can get the parabola to be separated, which is like the strong pairing limit of the P plus IP superconductor, or you can get two of them to intersect. And once you get them intersect, I can show you why exactly this physics will happen.
What goes to the light holes?
Light holes are separated, farther from the... No, I'm not assuming it comes out. Yeah.
They happen to be...
Yeah, it's always the case. But also the light hole is slightly mixed with the E1 band. The symmetry is basically the E1 symmetry.
No,
I need two levels. So far, I assume they're not spin split, but I exactly need two levels to get quantum spin Hall effect. So now you see this, this message is very, very important, the analogy between these two pictures. Okay, the strong pairing, weak pairing, topological phase transition is exactly the same thing as this. So now it turns out historically we didn't first knew about indium arsenide, this type 2 quantum well. At a conference, I met Lawrence Mollenkampf, and we knew about mercury territe. So to make a long story short, it's very, very simple physics. Basically, in ordinary semiconductor, you have S atomic level, P atomic level, and that splits into P3 half and P1 half. The chemical potential is here. The two parabolas don't intersect. Nothing interesting happens. But in mercury territe, the spin orbit coupling is so strong that the P level splitting due to the spin orbit coupling overwhelms the initial level difference between S and P. So when the chemical potential is here, you get two intersecting parabola and you get into this interesting topological regime. Just to convince you why you get the model which is exactly the same as P plus IP pairing, you take a four band model, you take S up, S down, P plus IP up, that's the heavy hole, P plus IP down, and to the lowest order, you can just look at S up with up, down with down. And so in the diagonal element, you would have the energy difference between up, S and P. So now this is the matrix form is identical to the P plus IP superconductor. The interpretation is different. Here, the 2x2 matrix is not in the particle hole space, but in the parity opposite S and P state. So you have a mass difference, which is the energy level difference between S and P, and on the off-diagonal matrix element, you exactly get P plus IP. Why? Because that's the overlap between S orbital and the P plus IP orbital. Now, in mercury territe quantum well, there's a wonderful thing you can do, namely by tuning the width. And by tuning the width, you can change this parameter and you exactly get the two parabolas to intersect or not. So this thing that I think in this community you only talk about theoretically can be experimentally realized, this transition that Reed and Green pointed out between strong and weak pairing, topological phase transition happens here. It has been experimentally realized. So we predicted that in mercury territe quantum well, you will get this interesting edge state only when you have enough mercury territe to generate for your spin orbit coupling. So Lawrence Mollenkamp's group has grown wafers with various thickness, and you can predict that the phase transition happens when the thickness is 6 nanometer. So when they made a wafer whose thickness is below 6 nanometers, something like 5, then you tune the gate voltage to go to the from the N-type to P-type, going through the insulator regime, and you see almost infinite resistance. When you go into the take a wafer which is 7 nanometer in thickness, you get into a topologically non-trivial phase. You have this helical edge state, and it gives you 2 E squared over H conductance independent of this width of the... Yeah, it's the gate voltage.
But what is the parameter?
Yeah, that's a little bit more complicated. There should be a regime, because the regime is when you're tuning the chemical potential, changing the Fermi level, anytime the Fermi level is inside the gap, you always have 2 helical edge states to access conduction channels. It's the regime in terms of Fermi level is the gap. But translating the Fermi level into the gate voltage, there's some non-universality.
I don't understand that. The Fermi level doesn't go to a gap. It jumps from...
No. Yeah, if it's topologically trivial insulated will jump. Right. But non-trivial insulated will not jump because there are states inside the gap, living on the edge.
But in both cases, I see...
Yeah, so there will be some... some localized state. So now they also have done non-local measurement, for example, by passing a current from a multiple terminal device, passing current from 1 to 3, measuring very far electro, and you can work out a general non-local conductance formula, and everything works.
So you
pass a current here and measure voltage here. Oh, so the size is given here. Yeah. So basically, you can predict a precise relationship between all of these. Okay. So now I really have to hurry. So now it gets to the, like the picture is quite complete. So now for the quantum Hall effect, you have chiral fermions. That's kind of which breaks time reverse. So this state has the most edge degree of freedom, and this state has the least. It's chiral Majorana fermion here, and chiral complex fermion here, and massless Dirac here, and massless Majorana here. So what is the unifying theme of all of these? So I thought and thought a little bit about helical. Basically, it is the 2 copies of chiral superconductor, upspin paired into P plus IP, downspin paired into P minus IP. It turns out that you cannot open up a gap unless you break time reversal symmetry. In one slide, but not. So I try to find a unifying theme of all of these. What exactly are we doing? How we find new things? And I came to a realization that the only thing you're doing is taking successive square roots. And that always is a very good guiding principle for discovering new things in mathematics and physics. For example, -1 is very interesting. We took the square root, you get I, you get complex analysis. Klein-Gordon is very interesting. You take the square root, you get Dirac. Dirac is very interesting. You take the square root, you get chiral fermions. Special relativity is very interesting. You take the square root, you get supersymmetry. Einstein relativity is very interesting. You take square root of, and you have one dimension of spinless fermion. If you want to half the degree of freedom, you have to go to the edge of quantum spin Hall. If you have 1D spin full fermion, you take the square root, you get a helical edge state. So now I'd like to ask ourselves the question. What is about these non-abelian statistics this community has been discussing, and when you get to helical superconductor, what do you expect? So now, if I have a like Schriefer-Higgins type of insulator model, I can have a conduction band, I have a valence band. If they're particle hole symmetric, you will get a complex fermionic zero mode level, and you will get fractional charge 1/2 if you have this situation. So the interesting thing this community has been discussing is that if you take the half of that, or the square root of that, then you get only a chiral superconductor. The whole level is basically redundant. Then the mid-gap level is a Majorana zero mode rather than a complex fermion zero mode, and that gives you non-abelian statistics. Basically, that's one simple way of saying the physics. So in some way, this non-abelian statistics is like taking the square root of the fractional charge. So the question I'd like to ask is, what happens to this picture in a time reversal invariant system? So in a time reversal invariant system, let's say take an insulator, if you can create a soliton, so you have conduction band, valence band, then you will have 2 mid-gap state at zero energy. And then they are related to each other by the time reversal symmetry or the Kramer's doublet. Then you get the interesting phenomena, which is spin charge separation. Because you put the Fermi level here, you get a holon. You put the Fermi level here, you get a charge-on. If you fill one of them, you get a spin-on. Now you may ask yourself, what is the definition of spin charge separation when spin rotation symmetry is broken and time reversal symmetry is still there? Then you can define spin-on as a Kramer's doublet and charge-on and holon as a Kramer's singlet. So therefore, the fundamental equation for spin charge separation is T squared equals to minus one to the number of fermions. So for example, if you have zero fermion number, then you get T squared equals to minus one. And that's the very interesting situation of the spin-on. Spin-on has no charge, but it's a Kramer's doublet. Ordinary textbooks in quantum mechanics tells us anytime you have even number, you should get Kramer's singlet. Anytime you have odd number, you should get Kramer's doublet. So spin charge separation is exactly the opposite representation. So this kind of thing is a fundamental characterization of a time reversal symmetric insulator. So now, if you get this situation, basically, but for our purpose, you just think about the helical superconductor as two copies of the P plus IP superconductor, P plus IP for spin up, P minus IP for spin down. And it turns out this is generic. You don't need to formulate any mixing due to spin orbit coupling. It is invariant. And then you get into a situation that the Majorana zero mode in a vortex core will get doubled. And you will get two Majorana zero. So naively, you will say, well, two Majorana zero mode is not very interesting because it's like one Dirac mode. But something very interesting happens because these two Majorana modes have to form a Kramer's doublet. They're related to each other because there's time reversal, T squared equals to minus one time reversal symmetry. So these two Majorana modes have to be related to each other by the time reversal symmetry transformation. So now you get into a very interesting situation. Because out of the two Majorana, you can form one complex mode. And once you have one complex mode, you can talk about field or not field. And these two situations changes the fermion number parity by one. But now time reversal also relates one thing to the other. So that tells you that the square root of this equation is this equation, which tells you that the time reversal symmetry transformation changes the fermion number parity. So this is like supersymmetry. It tells you that time reversal symmetry, you have Kramer's doublets. But now they become like the doublet has opposite fermion number. It's like relating fermionic state to the bosonic state. So inside this helical superconductor in the vortex core, just a very simple doubling with some generic robustness constraint, you will get into this situation. So I think this emergence of this discrete supersymmetry is kind of the square root of spin charge separation. So you will take. So I think I can skip all of these. So we are all trying to search for new states of matter. These are kind of states of matter which for both of our community now considered to be pretty boring. They just break some symmetry in slightly different way. But now we have quantum Hall, quantum spin Hall effect, chiral superconductor, helical superconductor, all with very interesting fractionalization phenomena. And in quantum spin Hall, it turns out the experimental development is also very fast. So Shankar, yeah.
So the type 2 quantum loss system,
yes,
is a very old system,
yes,
which the IBM group,
yes.
You know, throughout the 80s, this is all they were doing.
Yeah.
And I never heard of their seeing anything interesting.
Yeah, but it's already hidden in the data, very, very.
So why is it? I mean, it is generic.
But they didn't realize this connection. They were, people were computing the Bohr band structure.
But
nobody really looked at it. They should look for it exactly. What is the thing they missed is they didn't look very carefully in the data figures. When you look at the paper by Lauren Pfeiffer, Mike Pepper from Cambridge, he was also doing that. And there's a published figure which looks almost very, very similar to Lawrence's figure. Yeah, in the figure, it's...
What is the measurement?
Yeah, the measurement is tuning the gate voltage and measure the conductance. And you can gate it because it's a narrow gap quantum wire.
Across the world?
Across the, no, you can, across, it's the same measure, basically, very similar measurement to what Lawrence has done. Basically, it's the Hobart conductance. So you put, it's a four terminal conductance, you source, sink, gate, measure the voltage here, voltage there. Okay? So they can actually, well, it took some time for them to make a very good gate. And the gate still today is not very good. It's Ray Ray Dew is here. We're trying to revive this field. The gate, so Lawrence's group in the past 20 years not only achieved 1 million mobility for Mercury Terra quantum well, they also achieved successful gating. Gating in the arsenide gallium antimony is always a little bit problematic. But in the Pepper group, they did a pretty nice gating experiment. And you can go from N-type to P-type through the nominal. They actually found the, they have seen the hybridization gap, the question that Jim asked. The two parabola intersecting a gap opens up. So then, so when the Fermi level goes inside the gap, they see actually a finite conductance. How large the gap? It's less than 10 millielectron volt. 10 millielectron volt. Yeah, less than. I mean, depend on the interface.
Less than 1 millielectron volt.
No. It's it depends on the interface because it's all hybridization physics. So similarly, just in the course of this week, there's a theory paper, there's experimental papers from Princeton. It's a material that everybody is studying. Thermoelectric material, the best thermoelectric material, bismuth 2 terahertz 3, turned out to be a topological insulator. With a big gap, room temperature gap, 0.3 electron volts. Yeah, bismuth selenide, no, bismuth terahertz is the best thermoelectric material. Bismuth 2 selenide 3 is a room temperature topological insulator. Yes. Right. Yeah. No, this is much, much simpler. It's the real electromagnetic response of the insulator. You are just capturing, you can write down all the linear response equation. The only thing you are doing is to capture that in terms of action. Yeah, it is U1. And E dot B is U1. It's the actual E, actual B. Now I've been engaged in momentum space. The real space action is U1. Yeah, now I'm dealing Barry's curvature. And in retrospect, a lot of these we should have suspected many, many years ago. Right? We know there's the orthogonal class, quantum Hopf happened in the unitary class, something very interesting must happen in the symplectic class. And all this is just a statement about the beautiful physics of the symplectic class.
I want to go back to this picture where you have a monopole.
Yeah, right.
So, my question is, this individual electric field configuration.
Wouldn't
it change if you just use, you know, standard Coulomb interaction with the particle? If the, you know, charge is coupled to charge.
But the Coulomb interaction does not give you a... So you also need to carefully consider the screening lens. No. He is just saying if you don't have two electrons, but many electrons. But so there's always a density, there's a screening lens, you can go into the regime. It's all in our paper detailed, that you can get into a regime where the interesting statistic is. And the idea of measuring this is very similar to what we have been discussing here. just through the quantum interference measure. Right. So, of course, last year you heard about Charlie King's talk. You already heard it before, by putting a superconductor on top of the surface, and there you get non-abelian statistics, which is even more interesting. Now, if we want to build a room temperature device, at least half of it we already have. One half. It's a very important thing, yeah.
This is the surface of the freedom.
Right, right.
Of course, that depends on the chemical potential being in the gas.
Yeah, but it tells you that no matter whether, if you have a surface magnetization, you either get one half or minus one half.
But if you above the gas, then.
Yeah. So I'm saying about the response of an insulator, that by definition. So there's a bulk gap, and then there's a surface gap opened by the magnetic moment. You have to do careful chemistry to make sure.
So you have to be within.
To make it an insulator. Yeah,
but
yeah.
You have to be within the surface.
Yeah. Now it turns out.
Then comes this question, the chance of that there would be fluctuations in the density.
So if you don't get an insulator, there's nothing we can say. If you get an insulator, there are only two possible values, one half or minus one half. It's absolutely true what you're saying. That's why, for example, the first topological insulator that has been considered is bismuth antimony. That has very complicated surface state. And that may be very, very hard to achieve. But the new class looks beautiful. A single Dirac cone and Fermi level is very close to the Dirac crossing.
So I plus one half and minus one half. If I'm away from the Dirac cone and I apply a B field, I'll get Landau levels. And I could have N plus
Modular one, yeah. Modular one, yeah.